Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's that love that's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
Don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Ooh, we got trouble.
Oh, man, do we ever.
I mean, we don't, but Houston does.
Yes.
Ha, ha, ha.
And maybe the baseball in general because of it. Welcome to... Hey, Cheeks, welcome to West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast.
I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Wow.
Yeah, we had one quiet week, and then all of a sudden, wild controversy. And I'm not talking about Cole getting slighted for the Cy Young.
I mean, we can get into that a little bit later. But, I mean, yeah, I feel like at risk of burying the lead, might as well just get right into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's nice to see baseball in the forefront in November.
Yes. Yeah. But overshadowing football, basketball, yeah.
But like this, maybe it's not the best way to be on the front page. But wow, I mean, a lot going on in Houston and Astroville, of course.
Yeah, if you've been living under a rock, the Astros have been accused of cheating in a major way for apparently long time, 2 years.
At least. Yeah. I mean, and really, that's 3 years. You talk about 17, 18, and 19.
Right. That's true.
It's Mike Fiers. I mean, you know, look, that guy's willing to go on the record and just straight up say, yeah, hey, no, look, this is a... I mean, he's quoted as saying, that's not playing the game the right way. You know, they were advanced and willing to go above and beyond to win. Yeah, you know, the old saying, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, sure. But that generally doesn't pertain to...
To electronically stealing signs. Yeah, it's part of the game to steal signs, but no one's ever used a telephoto lens camera live video feed into the dugout to be able to relay signs in real time to the batter in the batter's box.
That's just insane, man. Real time. Real time. And it's true. I mean, all you just watch these Danny Farquhar video. I mean, there's going to be so many more videos coming up.
Oh, yeah.
People digging deep and finding all these. It's just, it's crazy. You know, I remember at the end of 17, you know, Dodgers front office was saying, you know, like, it, you know, Darvish wasn't tipping his pitches. Like, they were adamant about that. But, you know, at risk of sounding like sour grapes, you can't really go much further than that. I mean, and they didn't know for sure. They didn't know exactly all the details, right. Obviously.
But he was getting hit hard.
Smashed, man. Smashed. Didn't even go three innings in like two starts, right? He went like one and a third in both starts, giving up nine runs or something. It's just insane. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not willing to completely forgive and forget Darvish, but it does make it a little easier to swallow knowing that they were just full-blown.
Yeah, cheating on.
Yeah, you know, and it's, you know, the Nationals knew this. I mean, are they...
They figured it out and were able to counter it.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, you know, they understood that there's something going on here, so let's... And they were changing their signs up from the get. I mean, nobody on there changing up signs. The entire series, which they didn't do in any of the previous series, they didn't change their signs once, as far as I know, from the division through the championship. But when they got in there, when they got into Houston, they knew, you know, and they made it, they changed their tactics. Now, that's not to say that, every team should just change their tactics and, you know, that it's on them. No, I mean, this isn't, they should not be cheating this way. It's not on the, you know, incoming club to change their signs and just deal with it. No, this isn't. This is an extremely unfair advantage. I mean, the writing's on the wall. This is egregious.
It really is. And what baseball is going to do about it, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, for the most part, a lot of sports, baseball included, they're copycat leagues. So once one team starts doing something, other teams is going to do something. How are they going to stop the other 29 teams from doing something similar at this point?
What do you mean? You mean going forward? Or are you talking about?
Yeah, going forward. How are you going to ensure that every home park doesn't have a live video feed?
Well, they already do. There's already rules against that. Every monitor in the clubhouse and the dugout has to have an 8-second delay. Now, of course, nowadays with smartphones and everything else like that, all you got to do is go pop into the clubhouse and just go get your trainer's iPad or something. You know, I mean, you see all the iPads nowadays anyway.
They all have a guy sitting in the clubhouse watching the game for a potential replay. Opportunities.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's at least one guy always watching the game live on TV. But he's far enough away.
But he's not supposed to have any communication with the players in the dugout.
Not direct. The manager can call to see if should we review that play.
And that's separate. And MLB is supposed to have a person in that room with the people in the organization at all times to make sure that there is no foul play. Starting in the 2018 postseason, the new rules were stated as no camera installed beyond the outfield fence and between the foul poles may capture an image of the catcher's signs. Any camera in that area needs advanced approval from the commissioner's office. The league has also set rules about the placement and use of monitors and TVs, mandating that virtually every screen be on an 8-second delay. However, the Astros' actions in 2017 were a violation of the rules written even as they were written then. Quote, Major League Baseball regulations prohibit the use of electronic equipment during games and state that no such equipment may be used for the purpose of stealing signs or conveying information designed to give a club an advantage. So, I mean, even without the new 2019 and 2018 postseason rules, they're still breaking the rules in 2017 with the rules that already existed.
I mean, if you're going to break the rules, you're going to break the rules, no matter what the rules say, I suppose.
Okay, just in case somebody's listening that doesn't know what the hell we're talking about, early in 2017 season, at least two uniformed Astros got together to start the process. One was a hitter who was struggling at the plate and had benefited from sign stealing with a previous team, according to club sources. Another was a coach who wanted to help. But three other sources who were inside the organization in 2017 had direct knowledge of the scheme, discussed its existence on the condition of anonymity. This is why fires coming out is a pretty big deal. The Astros set up required technical video knowledge and required the direct aid of at least some of the baseball operations staff, team sources said. And now that they had fired Brandon Taubman, right, during the championship series, or right, during the World Series, they actually fired him. Series, yeah. They waited a while before they fired him, looking extremely bad and just showing how just gross and kind of just icky, to use that word, the culture in Houston is. They already had MLB, that is, already had a scheduled, in the commissioner's office, interview with Brandon Taubman scheduled for this week just to talk about that. But you know they're going to be talking about this. And now has no incentive to protect that team.
No.
I mean, it's just going from bad to worse for them. I will say, though, it is pretty good timing, great timing, in fact, of Nolan Ryan to leave the organization like mere days before
it is all before this came down. Story broke. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he'll still be interviewed, but he's at home chilling right now, just watching the fire, the whole house burn down. He's just, Nero watching the city burn. Even during the American League Championship Series this year, the Yankees believe the Astros were whistling, you know, from the dugout to communicate pitches. And now we know they probably were,
Right.
So how they did it, it's not even really overly complicated. A feed from a camera in center left, fixed on the catcher's signs, hooked up to a TV monitor, placed on the wall steps inside the team's home dugout, in that little tunnel that runs between the dugout and the clubhouse. You know, team employees and players would watch the screen during the game and decode the signs and sit opposite on these like massage tables, just right there staring at the TVs watching. And when they believed there was a, you know, off-speed pitch or breaking ball, they smacked the trash can with the baseball bat. And when there was a fastball, they didn't do anything. You know, you know, people are talking about how much did Cora know? How much did Beltran know? How much did Hinch know? They had to have known all this. I mean, come on.
You would think if it was that close to the dugout that absolutely they would have had to have known that was going on. And whether they were directly involved or not, they're all complicit and probably benefited from the effect of this form of sign stealing.
Right. And I've seen, you know, people, managers, Buck Showalter as one, and other people in and around baseball talking about this, and nobody really wants to say anything definitive because there is nothing definitive yet in terms of who is personally responsible.
Investigation.
And so
is
when they
underway.
Ask about, do you think Hinch knew? A lot of people are trying to step around that. Well, maybe, maybe not. Bottom line is, if Hinch didn't know, that guy has no job or position.
Business being a manager.
He has no business being a manager. If you don't know what's going on, if you can't hear that, if you're not privy to that information, you are a terrible manager and you shouldn't even have a job. Yeah. He knows. He knew.
Oh, yeah.
He knew everything. Now, Beltran put his foot in his mouth recently when they asked him. You know, it was like the day or two after it came out. Now it's been a few days. And he said, no, we were never using electronics to steal signs. We just stole signs the old-fashioned way. Now, he is maybe in the most trouble out of all of them because he's already on the record lying, potentially. I mean, if they can prove that he knew.
I mean, he wasn't under oath at
the
time.
No, he's not under oath. Doesn't matter. He's lying to the media and to the public.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's bad enough to get you the boot. Now, the real question is, how do you punish these guys? Especially since Cora is with a different team. And Beltran is now the manager of the Mets. You know, it's easy to say Hinch. You know, I mean, so I don't know. This is the one thing that people can't really wrap their heads around. And it's tough. How do you punish these guys?
Well, I mean, the extreme measure can be taken from the 1917 White Sox.
Just, 1919, Black Sox scandal you're talking about.
I am. And where the whole team was banned, whether or not they admitted to the fixing of a game or not, they were all just, you're all banned.
So right. Yeah.
And they had to totally retool their team from the bottom up. That might be a bit extreme, and then it does unduly punish some of these teams that have players from that 2017
right, and team, not to mention Astros team. The Astros manager and the Mets manager. I mean,
right.
You know,
well, I mean,
so you're going to be punishing those two other teams in the process.
And the Red Sox, too, because of Cora.
Right. No. Oh, yeah.
And it's you want to punish the Astros as a team. How do you do it? It doesn't really. I mean, okay. So take away a draft pick.
Right.
Or two,
that's what people. That's not nearly enough
money. I mean, right. These guys, the owner's a billionaire. What's a couple million dollars to a billionaire?
Right.
You know, it's
and what's a couple draft picks? If anything, it'll probably help them. And they're not going to be getting any draft picks anyway. They're going to be, you know, they're winning the pennant, and you know, it's
right.
They're going to be on the bottom of that barrel anyway.
So,
or maybe they can't sign a free agent or something. Again, that's probably just even going to help them a little bit.
It might. I mean, so they maybe they, you know, otherwise choose not to sign a free agent. You never have to sign one. So what do you do? I mean, Buck Showalter was trying to say, how do you hit them in the win column? How do you restrict the wins? I mean, it's a little bit too late to take the championship away from the Astros from 2017.
Right.
If it had come out the day after they beat the Dodgers, then maybe, hey, you know, this is not right. But
well, I don't know. See, even if it did come out a day after, they still won it. And how do you turn back time? I mean, I think if they're going to rescind it a day after, they should rescind it now. But I don't think that's going to happen. They want it. You know, you can't turn back time. You can't take away a championship.
Right.
But like you're saying, you can hit them in the win column going forward. Now, I don't really know how to do that. I mean,
I don't really. But in thinking on the matter, after listening to Buck Showalter say this in a radio interview, and I was thinking, well, if you want to punish the Astros going forward in the win column, why don't you have for every Astros home game in 2020, have the Astros start in a 0-2 hole. Just spot the visiting team two runs to begin the game. Now, it will definitely affect the Astros' win total, but it's not a...
That's
unreasonable amount of runs to say that the Astros couldn't come back and ultimately win that game, but it would be quite a bit harder. You know,
nothing for you.
Yeah, that's a pretty. I mean, you know, that would affect the game in a negative way too.
Well, but I mean, if you're trying to punish cheaters from getting that advantage, put them in the opposite situation.
You got to put the fear of God in these teams. You got to make them be like, all right, you know, we're going to police ourselves. We can't have anybody doing this.
Yeah.
Just like steroids. I mean, you can't, you have to scare them to where they want to police themselves, to where the last thing they want is, you know, for a guy to get caught cheating, you know, severe punishments within the clubhouse. But to do that, you have to set an example. You got to crucify somebody or some organization, you know.
Right.
And
but how do you do that in a significant manner?
I know, because even you know, $5 million, that's not going to be enough.
Maybe what if you?
Well, Hinch has to get suspended or fired outright. Bottom line, he's gone. They can't let him come back and manage that team with the slap on the wrist. I mean, that's insane. Hinch has to be gone. Now, when you're talking about Cora and Beltran, that's tough because, of course, Beltran was a player back then. So he has a players' union on his side, and he has a whole different set of rules by which they can judge him and everything else. But, I mean, Cora, yeah, he had to have known. He was the bench coach. He knows exactly what's going on. You know, I mean, that's the real question. How do you punish them? And really, you know, the way I'm looking at it, yeah, you suspend them for at least a year. Sucks to be the Astros. Sorry. You got to find another guy, you know. Sorry, Mets. But Beltran was doing, I mean, and especially if Beltran was caught lying, I mean, that's just insane.
Right.
The fact that Pete Rose gets, you know, banned for life for betting on his own team because it goes against the rules of potentially altering the course of the game. This, they're altering the course of the game in broad daylight, in plain sight, and there is evidence of it. That is the literal, that's the same rule they got Pete Rose for, potentially altering the course of a game.
Right.
So how are these guys going to survive, I mean, a one-year ban, let alone lifetime ban? I mean, if they're all caught doing it, if they can prove that they all did it, I can't see why that wouldn't be too strong of a penalty, lifetime ban, for the managers, right? I mean, players, I don't know. Year suspension? I don't know. But, I mean, the execs, the higher-ups, the people that are controlling this and that should have been preventing it need to be hit hard.
They also maybe deserve a ban. Stop from serving in an executive role in baseball for 5 years.
Yeah.
To life.
Yeah, you really got to scare the other teams. You know, there's been a long history, though, of mistrust.
You restrict, maybe you take away the revenue from the team generated for a year.
What do you mean?
Well,
you talking about, like, ballpark sales, stuff like that?
Yeah, any sort of revenue money made that the Astros made, that would hurt the owner in the pocketbook.
Yeah, and yeah, because
you don't
want to necessarily hurt the fans because they have nothing to do with it. But at the same time, you know, I hate to use an awful term, collateral damage, yeah, but in that sense,
the fans are collateral damage. They would have in this to be. Case. I mean, the fans were cheated in a sense because their historic World Series win, the first World Series win in the franchise history, is now tainted.
Oh, yeah.
Forever.
Oh, they're gonna have and that asterisk.
That already hurts the fans.
Right.
There's something that they were absolutely proud of is now soured.
I award you no points.
Yeah, 100%. You know, going back to even 2018, the Red Sox were famously warned by the Indians to watch out for the Astros' attempts to steal signs and information during the postseason. The Astros had clandestinely hired, I'm using air quotes now, a guy named Kyle MacLachlan. Not to be confused with Kyle MacLachlan. Of Twin Peaks fan, amazing man and actor, to essentially sit in the opponent's dugout with an Astros badge and spy, and was even caught using his camera phone to take pictures during Game 3 of the ALDS. He was then caught taking pictures near the Red Sox dugout during Game 1 of the ALCS in 2018. MacLachlan has been removed by security in Cleveland and Boston. Earlier that year, during a late August game against Oakland, the A's players noticed Astros players clapping in the dugout before pitches and believed they were relaying stolen signs to pitchers in the batter's box. And I mean, this is 2018.
Right.
So now you have a detailed account of 17, 18, 19.
Right. I mean, one of the biggest stats that I saw a graph. Someone graphed out the ups and downs of strikeouts for teams and the MLB across, a couple decades at least. And the drop in number of strikeouts for the team, the Astros, in 2017 was the biggest drop in history.
There's no needle spikes for theirs. Theirs just goes flat and everybody else is
It was everyone is up and down within a certain range, and the Astros dropped
way below
the normal drop in strikeouts for a team in the major leagues.
I believe it. This is also why they had such a high walk rate. High walk rate, right. low strikeout rate.
When you know what's coming, you can afford to be patient. You can take that pitch that you don't want because you know what's coming. Just keep fouling off. Fastball.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just insane. I mean, it's just going to get deeper and deeper.
It's looking really bad. I don't know what they're going to do, but they've got to do something in the next 3-4 months.
Kevin Gausman recently tweeted, this Astros thing is bad, 3! Guys lost jobs, got sent down, missed service time because of how they were hit in Houston. Does anyone really think they only did this in 17? Hashtag get real. Yeah, man. I mean, you know, it's Fires is blowing that whistle, and it's good that he is. You know, I mean, some guys might hate him for it, but I'm pretty sure the only guys that are going to hate him for it are wearing orange.
Yeah.
And they're not the Giants. I mean, although maybe the Giants are too.
Well, it just makes the Giants run at the beginning of the decade that much more impressive because they did it clean.
Or did they? The Astros made some history, albeit with some ignobility, by having the most wins over a 3-season span, regular season and postseason.
It's amazing what you're going to accomplish when you know what pitch is coming.
They beat the 69-71 Orioles by one win. So, again, another asterisk, though. They're going to be the Barry Bonds of the sports annals. Oh, Astros.
Yeah.
And good job, Nolan. Good job, Mr. Ryan, getting out of there right before the ship burned down.
But now, this brings up an interesting question. What did Nolan Ryan know? Was he involved in this and not? He was staring down the opposing pitcher. We saw.
Yeah, I think that alone. Stands, but that alone is intimidation enough. Just having to look at the all-time strikeout king staring at you, judging you, your every move. When you get a strikeout, he's stone face. Doesn't make any sort of expression. When you give up a home run, he's stone face. Doesn't give up any expression. I mean, the man is. I mean, that's tough. That is tough. Man. Either it brings out the best in you, or you're just going to crumble under the pressure. So maybe that alone, maybe you shouldn't be able to have like Randy Johnson sitting behind home plate.
Or Randy Ryan. Johnson would have the camera there. He's a wildlife photographer now. That's so I don't right. know.
That is true. all right. I mean, look, beside punishment, I mean, that's where I'm at. Fire all of them. Ban them even maybe for life. Especially if it all comes
it's extreme, but
you know your whole two run per game per home game idea is intriguing. But I mean, that would just completely change the game, and kind of like, you know, they're talking about this whole stupid future rule of extra innings. You get guys on second or something. Right. You know,
the international rules. Yeah,
yeah. I don't like that at all. You know, keep the game the way it is, but. You got to do something, and you got to scare the hell out of them. Not like the Spygate garbage with New England. That didn't hurt them at all. They're fine. You know, you got to hurt these guys, and it's got to come from the top. I don't know. Anyway, once that Brandon Taubman interview comes out, that could be the nail in the coffin. I bet it's like DEFCON 4. I mean, they're all, it's like episode of Law and Order. All those like high-end execs are probably getting coached right now how to go through depositions, what to say, what not to say. I mean, oh my God. The whole house is caving in. Everybody is a suspect. Yeah. I would not want to be in that organization right now. It's going to be pretty tough. Now, on some lighter notes, there were some awards given out this last week.
There was. We had all of the Baseball Writers Association of America awards given out.
Now, before we get into all the main ones, did Zach Greinke get the Silver Slugger?
He did. He got the Silver Slugger and the Golden Glove for pitchers in the National League. And this happened while pitching in the World Series for the American League, which is quite an interesting.
Has that ever happened before?
I don't think so.
Man, watching Greinke during the postseason, just, you know, his defense is just stellar. He's still one of the best in the game. Or I guess he's the best in the game if he's getting the gold glove.
Well, he was this past year.
Over at the one hole there. Yeah, I mean, that guy's looking great. Unlike Justin Verlander, who can't even throw it past his own foot when he's on the ground. That's pretty good. But yeah, it's Cy Young. DeGrom won handily.
Oh, yeah.
It's
a landslide.
It's a little more of a landslide than I was expecting, but...
Ryu did get come in second, barely.
He only got one first place vote.
Yeah, and 10 second place votes.
Well, not barely. He was in second by a lot. He had 88 points to Scherzer, 72, but...
I guess barely is not the word, but in a distant second is perhaps...
Distant second more accurate. Correct. Yeah. You know, I mean, I guess it makes sense, even though Justin Verlander, I mean, I know he's in a different league, has the same amount of wins in one season that DeGrom has in the last two seasons combined. Now, far be it from me to show wins as a expression of pitcher's worth, but...
a great pitcher on a bad team is still a great pitcher.
That's true.
Whether it gets the wins or not.
I know. I'm just a bit salty. Okay, I'm surprised Flaherty though wasn't above Scherzer. I would have thought Flaherty had a better season than Scherzer, especially since he didn't miss any time. I mean, I know Flaherty's first half was more than subpar, but his second half was incredible. And also a guy like Strasburg or even Mike Soroka. But anyway, they all finished within the top 10, including Kershaw, Buehler, even Kirby Yates, as I believe the only relief pitcher in the top 10.
Yeah, tied for ninth.
Yeah. And then, as you stated earlier, yes, Justin Verlander did edge out Cole. And really, it wasn't even as close as I thought it was going to be. I guess it was pretty close. Verlander got 17 first place votes, and Cole got 13. 171 to 159. And then the table does drop off dramatically.
Yeah, well, no one else got any first place votes, so.
Right, so they that makes sense. Now, I don't know, like, what do you feel about this? Do you think they gave it to Verlander because he got snubbed a few years back before? I mean, he probably should have won a couple of those years in the past. I mean, 2016, 100%, he should have won that. Or was it 17? 16. 16, he should have won... Yeah, outright, but he didn't. And so was this like a little bit of, we're going to give it to you from all those previous years, and or all things being equal, we'll just give it to you, JV, because, you know, you're 36 and Cole is 29 kind of thing.
I don't know, maybe, but I don't know. It seems the system, this voting system with the Baseball Writers of Association, it seems a little bit flawed no matter what they do, because it's always very much biased.
It's all subjective. Yeah, 100%. I mean, these are awards at the end of the day. They don't really mean anything. They have no intrinsic value except for legacy and history. I mean
these same people in, you know, say 10 years or so are going to be voting on these very same players to be potentially in the Hall of Fame.
That's true.
And they'll look back at, oh, what awards did they win?
Right.
Whether they were deserving or not at the time, if they didn't win, it will count against them. And it's the same writers that are going to be voting for the Hall of Fame as they're voting for these awards.
You know, and we talked about this before, like, if either of them win, it's not going to be shocking, and I wouldn't care either way. I thought maybe Cole had the advantage just because he broke the all-time strikeout percentage record for a starter, which is insane. That being said, Verlander, there's only two other men in history that had a lower whip than Verlander. One of them's Walter Johnson. The other one was Pedro in, 2000, when he was just the greatest pitcher on the planet.
Right.
For, you know, the entire century, almost, really. I mean, one can argue those Pedro seasons there were just ridiculous.
When he was at his peak, he was unhittable.
So you're talking about a Verlander season where he is better than he's really ever been, and he still got 300 strikeouts, which is pretty insane because he had never done that before. And to do that in a same season where he's also not even letting anybody get hits. Now, he did give up a lot of long balls.
He did.
But that was the only thing they were getting on him was long ball or strikeout.
All or nothing.
Much. Yeah.
But that was cool. But that was the trend for the entire season for everyone.
That's true.
There was a lot more strikeouts this year than there has been, and there's a lot more home runs than there has been.
So, I mean, and really, it's kind of a tie. So, either way it goes, it kind of makes sense. Now, Verlander did have that no-hitter, which is, I mean, I guess if you're going to put it as a tie, guy who gets a no-hitter, probably give him the award, you know. Now, if you vote after the postseason, that's a whole different story.
Right.
Then you give it to Cole 100%.
Right.
But, of course, the ballots are submitted.
Just a performance in the World Series.
Right.
Mr. 0-7. But
it's 6, right? It's not 7. It's 6. Don't cut him too short. Five was the record, but now he owns the record all by himself with 6. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I'm pretty sure. Either way,
I have to go back in my
notes.
Don't
beat the guy when he's down. Although he's not down, he just won the Cy Young Award. So no.
and he's got a beautiful Hollywood starlet as a wife. So, you know,
he's a little hairy though. I mean, that guy's hairier than Robin Williams. Anyway, MVP.
MVP.
Were you surprised?
Of Bellinger? No.
Well, not me, obviously, but I mean,
of Trout a little.
Yeah.
I mean, we had talked about the virtues of finishing the season healthy.
Now,
and we talked about Bregman versus Trout, and they were close on all things. But now in light of how much was Bregman benefited from this developing scandal. I think maybe the right choice was absolutely made.
100% now, yeah.
But at the time, I was a little bit surprised that they gave it to Trout just because he did not finish the season.
Now, okay, as for volume and comparison, Mookie Betts won the MVP last year with only 14 more plate appearances than the 600 that Trout had in 2019. And there have been 9 previous winners with fewer than Trout's total. So if Trout had missed the same amount of time in April as opposed to September, do you think people would even blink? See, that's a different question. You know, when when you miss the end of the season, people think about that a lot. But if, you know, what if you just missed the first 3 weeks of the season? You know, would you still be thinking the same thing?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, and because I mean, the season is a long season, and it's really amazing when a player can compete in more than 155 games.
Right. Well, I mean, Bregman didn't, though. Oh, he did. He did 156 games. Yeah.
So it's an impressive feat to be able to stay healthy for the entire season. And there's really only a handful of players that do it from year to year.
Yeah. Well, now nobody does.
But in April, missing time in April, I think, and then finishing the season really strong. I think you win April. Time is time, but in April,
a win's a win.
In April, guys are still trying to figure out their swing, trying to figure out their delivery.
Mike Trout's trying to figure out his swing.
Well, no,
I guess you're right. But I guess you're right.
Some army coming out of spring training, and that's then fair. You go into the game. There's always a little adjustment period. The pitchers are still getting their arm strength to be able to go a full 100 pitches. So missing time at the beginning of the season is, you miss that little adjustment period, and you come in late when everyone is already established and going a lot deeper into games, and then to just blow away the field, I think is.
Yeah, and Bregman had that great run toward the end. Now, was his great run enhanced? Probably.
Maybe not.
The guy's hitting dingers off the curveball.
Electronically enhanced, perhaps. Yeah.
And I guess you could say, because the Angels ended the season with 18 straight games against teams that finished with 93 or more wins, that, yeah, those games did matter. And maybe his stats would have gone down had he finished the season. It's possible. Trout's never finished below second in MVP voting, with the exception of 2017 when he only played 114 games. It's just crazy. I mean, it's nuts. This guy.
No, there's no doubt that this guy is the second coming of Mickey Mantle. I mean,
He's better than the Mick at this point, I think, isn't he? I think he's more approaching Willie Mays territory at this point.
It could be. You could get some Yankee fans upset with that, but yeah. So Yankee fans, direct your hate mail to Adam.
Please do. Baseball Show Podcast at gmail.com. Yes. And Cody Bellinger, yes, was the first position player on the Dodgers to win the MVP since Kirk Gibson. He got 19 out of the 30 first place votes. So, and Yelich got 10. Pretty good. Rendon got one as well. But, come on. Yeah.
Kevin Pillar got one.
Kevin Pillar, he didn't get a first place vote.
Well, he wasn't a first base vote, but he did get a vote for MVP.
Oh, yeah, well, so did Max Muncy. But, in fact, he got 4 points. So get the hell out of here, Pillar. Bellinger and Yelich, same thing. Yelich obviously didn't finish the season, but you can't hold that against him. However, that being said, Bellinger's WAR is just, he got a 9. He's a 9.0. Yelich, 7.1. If you're just trying to talk about them being equal, they're not, because Bellinger is a much better all-around player. I mean, he's so versatile. He can play first base, outfield. How many guys can not just play first base and outfield, but center field? And do it above average, if not in an excellent manner. None, actually. I just answered my own question. Come on. 121 runs, 115 RBIs compared to 197 for Yelich. To me, it wasn't even really a choice. Now, had Bellinger's batting average slipped below 300, maybe you can start making an argument, but it didn't. He stayed above 3.
Yeah, so. No, that dude was a stud all year. There's no doubt about it.
Right. It's kind of interesting talking about the utility or the super utility, because it used to be that maybe a handful of teams out there, right, had a guy that was like designated as a super utility man. It was a great boon for your club if you had one of those guys. And they were pretty much just the guy at the end of the bench.
Play any position and hit a dinger in a pinch.
It used to be rare, but this last season, 2019, 47 different players played at least 5 different positions.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. You know, it's a pretty cool thing. You know, it's maybe we're going to be seeing this a lot more. That being said, there's going to be a new rule change, right?
Right, with a
one extra man that can't be a reliever, right? On your 26-man roster,
right.
I believe,
right? Instead of 25, and the amount of September call-ups will be less, significantly right. less,
yeah,
than it has been.
So if anything, yeah, it's probably going to be even more of a value to have a guy like this, a super utility guy. You know, I mean, starting in 2014, there were only 25 guys that played at least 5 position players.
It'll also allow for National League teams to get someone who can serve as a true DH in interleague games.
Right, exactly. And
just a pure hitter who can't really play the field the way he used to.
Yeah.
So he only goes in to start every once in a while, but he's your main pinch hitter and your designated hitter when appropriate.
You're right. It's hard to estimate and appreciate how effective these guys are in making things happen. Skip Schumacher, actually the Padres' first base coach, is quoted as saying, "We see the Dodgers a lot, and their versatility is one reason they're so tough to match up against. They've got 4 guys who can play in the infield and the outfield, and that makes them a nightmare for an opposing manager. Max Muncy can play first, second, or third, or they can put him in the outfield. Kike can play first, second, short, third, or anywhere in the outfield. Chris Taylor can play everywhere in the infield and everywhere in the outfield. Some games, all those guys are on their bench, so you're looking to match up as the game goes along. You're saying, where would they put Muncy? Anywhere. Or where would they put Taylor? Anywhere. It just makes them so hard to play. And it's true. So I think maybe these guys coming up now, you're going to be seeing them, you know, a lot more versatile. You know, and Bellinger is a perfect example. You know, he came up. And he only hit 1 home run in high school. I mean, that's just insane, right, to think about that. Really put the screws on himself, started to try to become the best athlete he can, and now, I mean, hell, he's won the MVP.
Right.
Know? It's insane. He was at risk of losing his job. You know, he only started, what, 2 games in the World Series last year? You know, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, not losing his job, but being severely demoted. And in the offseason, just really put in the work. And, I mean, Jesus, man. Yeah. It's a great example to these like, younger kids coming up. I mean, Bellinger is a young kid himself.
It also speaks to, I think, athleticism, yes, but also just pure baseball ability. If you can go in, hit, and then play 2 or more positions well, you know, it makes you that much more valuable to a team because. Hey, you fill in at first base. Hey, you can fill in right field, and do it well and not be a liability at either position.
That's value.
It's value, and it speaks to just pure baseball ability. It's impressive to be able to do that.
100%.
I do think that we're going to start to see more of these guys, just because. All the analytics taking place, they're going to be looking for guys who you can plug and play at different positions.
Oh yeah, I mean, imagine if you're coming up in the Padres organization or something. You know, are you really? And you're a shortstop. You know, you're not going to take Tatis's job, and you're not going to move over to third and take Machado's job. So you're going to be screwed for years.
Right.
So it behooves you to
learn to play second base.
Learn to play
left field. You know, it's
like
learn to catch,
like Mike Moustakas did. You know, and his job is saved. Yeah, well, learn to catch. Well, yeah.
Everyone needs a backup catcher. And if you have a guy who can back up the backup catcher, you know, you get into a long, like, you know, 15-plus inning game and say, hey, you know, get behind the, you know, put on the catcher's gear. You're going behind the plate for the next three innings.
That was always the old adage, right? That's the quickest way to the majors. Be a catcher.
Yeah.
You know, just get the shit beat out of you for a few years there, and hopefully you'll make it up. Now, switching gears a little bit, the Giants lost a guy, but they gained a guy. They lost Will Smith.
They did. They lost Will Smith. He signed with the Atlanta Braves. Picked up a quality closer. Signed a 3-year, $9 million contract. Good for him. With a club option for another year and $13
million. Yeah, I would take that over Kimbrel.
Yeah. And he was the first of the major free agents to sign. And actually, it was a little bit of a surprise. They were talking about
that's good.
All of the pitchers, free agents declining the qualifying offer, and didn't hear anything about Will Smith. And all of a sudden, oh, he signed with the Braves.
Yeah, you mean Bumgarner, Strasburg? Yeah, a lot of these guys declined. It's great for the Braves. You know, I think this is it's great for Braves fans. Also, they don't have to toil away thinking about the holes in their bullpen. Hey, look, now you have a solid closer.
So now this means also that Mark Melanson has now been replaced as closer by Will Smith twice.
That's pretty good. You have to do a little research on that for next episode. I want to see if that's ever happened. The same guy took the same man's job twice. It's like, I just can't shake this guy. Jesus.
And then you got following me.
You got Gabe Kapler.
Yeah,
finally
new matchler. Yeah, new manager, and there's a new GM in town as well. But yeah, the manager took all the headlines.
New GM.
Say. Yeah. His face Harris. He was the assistant general manager for the Cubs. Is now the general manager under Farhan Zaidi as the club president.
That makes sense. You know, I a lot of people, especially living here in the Bay Area, I don't want to say shit their pants, but we're not very happy
about
Kapler coming over here.
The general response has been negative. I don't see it as a negative.
Yeah,
I don't have a strong opinion. I don't know much about him.
So no, well, look, I mean, he almost got the Dodger job before Roberts, and I think Zaidi wanted him over Roberts, and then the ownership group was like, well, let's interview a few more people. Now I'm glad we got Roberts, but you know, the way it seems to me, if your GM or your president of baseball operations really really likes the guy, you got to trust him. I mean, that's his job. He knows him well. He's had a lot of experience now, especially in the Dodger organization and then in the Phillies. Now, Phillies tenure wasn't the best.
But it wasn't terrible.
No,
either.
It was around 500, right?
It was average, It was like 161, 163.
Now, the whole thing is his supposed mishandling of a bar fight. You know, I mean, it was allegations of sexual abuse that I believe came out after the fact, after his, you know, turn and handling the situation. I don't think he knew anything about that until later.
No.
You know, it's tough, man. When you're...
It is.
And he went up the proper channels. He told Zaidi. They all knew, you know. I mean, what's he supposed to do?
Yeah.
You know, that's not his job.
And he was cleared of any wrongdoing after a fairly extensive investigation in 2017. And
no, this is 2014. It,
the
investigation.
But the investigation
Got
was
it.
2017.
Yeah.
Both he and Zaidi admitted that, there's probably some mistakes made, and they would both handle it differently if they could go back and do that.
Right.
So I think that's a good sign. And I don't think that his tenure with the Phillies, as short as it was all that bad. He was a brand new manager. He made some mistakes in the beginning of his first season, but he hasn't repeated those mistakes.
If anything,
he was fired by the owner of the Phillies, not by the front office. And many of the Phillies players called Zaidi unsolicited to endorse Kapler.
Oh, really?
As a manager, yeah.
Well, I knew Kapler. I mean, Zaidi, as soon as Kapler got released, he was like, all right, that's my guy. Like, sweet. And then I didn't realize that the other people from the Phillies organization reached out to
players,
him, too.
Yeah.
You know, that if anything, I'm not happy because I think he's going to be a great manager here.
I think he has definitely potential to be. I mean, by all accounts, people that I've talked to, things that I've read about Kapler, says that he is ultimately a very intelligent, very intellectual, introspective type of guy.
He doesn't look like it.
He doesn't look like it. He is a fitness fanatic. He is a bodybuilder. He's in incredible shape.
Sounds like you're buying the calendar this year. No, I know. He's young. Youngish.
He is. Know? He's, I guess, 44.
Oh, wow. That's really young.
And he was an average player at best, a career 268 hitter. He was in the major leagues for 12 years and was on the 04 Red Sox World Series team.
Oh, really? I didn't know he was on that team.
So he's got some postseason experience, at least as a player.
I'll say.
I think that given the state of the Giants' hitting and some of the injuries that they had been plagued by the last few years, I think having a guy in charge who is a fitness fanatic would probably be overall good for the culture in the clubhouse, if not just to keep people motivated to stay in shape.
That's true. When your manager's in better shape than you, you better get out the ball. Yeah,
right. When your manager can bench press more than you.
Yeah. Looking at you, Brandon Belt.
Well, I was thinking more of Pablo Sandoval. I don't know how he'd take it, but
he's a lost cause. He's a lost cause. Although I will say, I was watching the 14 World Series highlight or whatever, like, you know, last month. They were showing it, you know, and Pablo got three jacks. Right. That guy was huge.
Oh, yeah.
He's way thinner now.
Oh, yeah.
He was gigantic.
Really big. And it got even worse when he was in Boston.
Well, yeah, he's ripping leather. I mean, literally, his belt snapped, right? The fact that the Giants were a very old team for a long time, and now they're injecting themselves with a lot of younger talent, and these guys have a younger, you know, approach to the game. And it's nice. I think it's good to have a younger manager for a team that's essentially rebuilding. I mean, the Giants are starting.
They don't want to admit it, but they are.
Yeah, 100%. Now, if Gerrit Cole comes to San Francisco, then you'll really be sitting pretty. But I don't know. Everybody thinks he's going to the Angels, and I guess he probably will because that's where he's from down there, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind seeing him in Dodger Blue. Yeah. But, you know, no, with our luck, we'll probably get Strasburg, and then he'll probably be – his career will be over after, like, a season-ending injury or something. You know,
Tommy John goes again. And
Strasburg's amazing, but honestly, if you're a fantasy player, you know all too well, with the exception of this year, he is just not somebody you can rely on and count on. Especially going after this season. We'll see what happens going into the next season. But him pitching an entire extra month in extremely high leverage situations. I mean, you know, we saw what happened to Chris Sale, you know, this last season. I mean,
right.
I mean, he was garbage for the first couple of months.
But
like absolutely terrible.
And Strasburg did not pitch as much as Sale did last postseason, did he?
I mean, he went 5-0 in the postseason. He pitched a lot. Strasburg. I would imagine he pitched just as much as Sale.
That would be interesting to look up. We'll have to find that out after the show.
Yeah, I mean, either way, that's still an entire extra month of pitching. Anyway, we'll see. We shall see. You know, we are going to get into a few other things here, but I don't know. How you feeling? You know, just the whole sort of wrapping up the year and looking at, you know, a lot of records that are being broken or things that we were talking about before the season started about, you know, what may happen, sort of predictions and everything like that. And especially, I'm just looking at strikeouts right now because,
right,
obviously home runs, everybody knows. Okay, sure. But yeah, the strikeout increase and the fact that, you know, there's no more, it seems like the idea of the fastball count is gone, right? It used to be a 2-0. You know a fastball's coming, right? 3-1. Okay,
right.
Fastball's coming, whatever. Not anymore. You know, it's pretty much all gone. And the numbers actually support it.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Such as?
In 2015, first pitch, let's just say, 0-0 count. First pitch fastball percentage was 63%. Right? 2019, it's 57%. And it's been going down every year since, you know, 15 and 19. But the whole idea of total strikeouts increased from 18 to 19. 2018 and 2019, it's the strikeouts increased 1,616.
Wow.
So, you know, when people talk about lack of action in modern baseball, you know, the game's the biggest culprit isn't pitching changes, it seems to me, or hitters stepping in and out of the box. The culprit simply is strikeouts.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
you're definitely going to have a lot more action in baseball when the ball is put in play.
Yeah.
And in the strikeout, the ball isn't put in play.
Nothing in baseball is rising at the same rate as strikeouts. Nothing. Not homers, not walks, yeah. Nothing. There were 2019 was the fourth consecutive season in which there were at least 1,000 more strikeouts than the year before. Yeah. I mean, that is insane.
Well, it's like what I had Crash Davis at the top of the show says. Fastball or strikeouts are fascist. So
besides that, they're boring. Yeah. According to Jason Stark of The Athletic, they couldn't find any other meaningful stat in baseball history that has ever gone up or down this many years in a row. In fact, they can't find a meaningful stat in any sport that ever did pretty much anything 14 years in a row, which since 2005, the total strikeouts has been going up. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. There were over 8,000 more strikeouts this season than there were in 2011.
8,000.
There were over 10,000 more than in 2008. So 23% of all.
Those are mind-boggling numbers.
It's insane. It's crazy. And we were talking about this going into the season. We'd say, well, we'll see what happens at the end of this season. Oh, yeah, the trend continues.
Yeah.
There were over, 23% of all plate appearances now end in a strikeout. It was 18% as recently as 10 years ago. Just for sort of reference, when Mickey Mantle entered the big leagues in 1951... it was 9.7%.
Yeah. No, there's a... we had in a previous show, I think maybe it was our first season, we found the stat where... I forget the player that was involved had struck out. It might have been
Chris Davis.
It might have been Mike Judge. Might have been Mike Judge.
Mike Judge.
Or
Beavis and Butthead?
No, well.
Aaron Judge?
No, Aaron Judge.
Oh.
Aaron Judge in his rookie season struck out like twice as many or as many times as Mickey Mantle did in his entire career.
Hey, that really sucked.
Jesus.
There's no stigma attached to striking out. People,
right?
Everyone is trying for the launch angle and trying to swing for the fences. They're missing more than they're hitting.
That's what they say. They say a strikeout is the same as a flyout, right? And sometimes it is, but that adage is bad because it's not always the same. You know, I'm looking at that game, the Atlanta St. Louis game, Atlanta St. Louis game, right? In the postseason, the 13-1 game, the first inning, they were just putting balls in play. They were just grounding to shortstop, grounding to second. They were just putting the ball. There was like four infield hits in that one inning. They won the whole series essentially because of that game, because of the momentum.
Yeah, well, it was game seven, wasn't it?
Was it? No, that wasn't game seven. No, it was like game five or something. Anyway, I don't know. Bottom line is, you put a ball in play, anything can happen. And watching that first inning was just that idea right in front of you, you know? You strike out, you're out. You have no chance. I mean, even just a guy losing the ball in the sun, you know? A strikeout is not the same as a flyout. On paper, maybe it is. But in reality, it's not. And it's not going to be slowing down anytime soon. I mean, because the increased number of shifts, and, of course, like we were talking about, there's no such thing as the fastball counts anymore, you know?
Right.
Even 0-0, right? Even first pitch.
First pitch is...
It's not a thing anymore. Yeah. It's pretty insane.
Strategies change. I mean, a pitcher is always going to want to get the batter out no matter how, but much more pitching for the strikeout while the batters are hitting for the home run.
Right. You know, after years of looking at the damage done by fastballs and fastball counts, coaches are realizing now and deciding to just have their pitchers spin the ball on a 2-0 count. You know, 2-0 counts, I'm looking at this, in 2014, 74% of the time was a fastball. 2019, 68% of the time. It's pretty cool, man.
Significant drops.
I like that because that's you're altering, you know, ancient wisdom for reality, and I like that. Like I'm all for that.
And pendulum will always swing back and forth. Maybe we're approaching an extreme here that it'll, you know, start, you know, going back. That hitters will start, you know, looking to put the ball into play and get a base hit. You know, get singles, get doubles instead of trying to launch it over the fence every single time.
Or just bunt it to the left side if you're a lefty.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
work against the shift.
That's what I want to see more of. I want to see, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you hit 40 home runs a year before. If they're giving you the entire left side wide open, smash a bunt down there. Like, I think Carpenter, I remember he hit like a bunt double. I think it was this season or the season before. That's what needs to happen. You know, people are always decrying the shift and trying to, even talking about banning the shift or regulating the shift, whatever the hell that means.
Just play against it.
Yeah, exactly.
Work against it.
Yeah. It's, I mean,
take what they give you.
You know, it seems like the use of the fastball is disappearing. It's not disappearing, but it is definitely shrinking. According to FanGraphs, only 52.7% of all pitches thrown this season were fastballs. That's pretty crazy.
It is. And maybe that's also due to pitchers trusting their stuff more, not worrying about hurting their arm more because the technology to repair a Tommy John. So I miss a year, but I come back stronger. I mean, there's a lot of factors that could play into it, but these are, I mean, significant changes in numbers. It's really quite amazing. 12%
decrease, since 2002. I don't know. Well, it's not really the best segue, but we're talking about baseballs. That brings us to this week's Ig Nobel Award of the Week.
Who gets it this week?
Well, Rawlings gets it this week, and MLB, because MLB is a small ownership of
double ignoble.
Rawlings and MLB. How about that? Unless the MLB bans the entire Astros, that then they'll get back in my good graces. Okay. That's fine. You know, Dr. Meredith Wills. Now we've talked about her a lot, the noted astrophysicist and recent baseball expert, literal baseball, the actual ball, not the game. The one that you're holding in your hand right now. Yes. She purchased 36 baseballs from Rawlings' website on October 23rd.
Three boxes.
Yes, three dozen. They were priced at $300 for a box of 12, while some were stamped 2019 World Series and some were stamped 2019 postseason. All were clearly represented as being the same as the balls used in postseason games. Now, the marketing included online listing stated that this baseball is being used in all of the 2019 Major League Playoff games, and she received verbal verification from the Rawlings retail division. The balls arrived in several types of packaging that said official game ball, Major League Baseball, which was kind of the first sign
red
of...
Red flag.
Yeah, the first red flag, with no alternative description, but with holographic authentication stickers associated with each ball. So she did a little research, and she found that it was extremely unlikely that the balls she analyzed for her study were drawn from the 2019 regular season batches. As MLB Mr. Manfred said in statements before the postseason, of the 36 balls that she got from Rawlings, only five had construction consistent with balls that would have been used on the field in 2019. So these aren't even... Not only are they not even postseason balls, they're not even the same year. They're not even the same season balls. Yeah, she emailed Rawlings' chief operating officer, Dennis Salberger, who indicated that those balls marketed to consumers online as the official 2019 postseason baseball in the product's description, authenticated and packaged in a box that was printed with official game ball on its face and stamped with similar phrasing, may not have been from 2019 at all. He also wrote, quote, "The balls that you procured are not the balls that would be used on field." I mean, if the company is selling items that include authentication, why how come I can't say that word? of their origin and their purpose, and neither is accurate, isn't that tantamount to fraud? Isn't that the literal definition of fraud? That's more than just misleading.
Right.
That is actually, that's lying. That's the definition of fraud. You know, had they not put the holograms on the ball, maybe not, but they did. Right. And they're selling that as on-field used ball. And for $300 right. bucks, they better be real used balls. And, Jesus. And,
well, these wouldn't be used balls. They would just be of the same batch.
Oh, okay, right. Balls used for field play that maybe didn't get used right. yet. Yeah.
And wasn't there another problem with some of the balls that the threads were going the wrong way because the official seal, Major League Baseball seal, was stamped on the wrong side?
I didn't know. I didn't see that.
I had read an our article. I think for it these, might be the same one.
These souvenir batch, balls or
when you look at an actual game ball, the threads, the little point is supposed to be going clockwise around the top of where it says official Major League Baseball. And some of these, they were stamped on the wrong side. So the thread point was going the opposite direction, going counterclockwise. So they would never have been used in a game.
Dead giveaway because of right that. There. Yeah. Yeah, so you didn't even need to cut open these balls, is what you're saying. Right. Some of them are so obviously fake.
Well, not necessarily fake, but not, authenticated incorrectly.
Or purposefully authenticated incorrectly. I mean, that's the thing. If they can prove that it was purposely, then that's fraud. If it's an accident, then somebody just gets fired and, okay, whatever. But, I mean, that's pretty bad. I mean, because the people that are buying this aren't this astrophysicist who's just doing it for studies. Like, they're buying it for their grandfather or for their sons or something.
And don't have necessarily the grant money to, it's drop coming a G. out of, I mean, $300 for 12 balls? Yeah, I mean, that's
insane.
Yeah.
Those better be game-used balls. Jesus. Well, I mean, we already talked about how it's only, like, 1.2 pitches a ball is used, so where are those balls going? Like, put those in a box and sell those. But I mean, you're not even selling 2019 balls.
Yeah.
And now that we know there's, I mean, at least not we, but like the experts and scientists know and can clearly see the differences between the balls. MLB can't hide. Rawlings can't hide.
Right. And were the balls that were being used in the postseason the same as the regular season?
Well, that's a whole different can of worms. Yeah,
absolutely.
But I bet Manfred isn't too worried because he's got bigger fish to fry in down there in Houston.
Yeah, he's got a good distraction to shield him from this one. See what happens next year.
Find me some good players, living players.
Bring back Shoeless Joe. Yeah. Okay.
What was that, Mr. Bird's? Honus Wagner, Mordecai Three Fingers Brown. Sir, all those players are dead. Mr. Bird's. All right. Well, is that it? I mean, we go to the trivia here.
I don't have anything else. Yeah, just a
really?
Trivia. Yeah.
All right. In that case, that brings us to last week's trivia question. Do you remember last week's trivia question?
Something about the Astros pitching.
Yes. With Cole exceeding 300 strikeouts this previous season, there are now three pitchers in Astros history that have accumulated over 300 strikeouts in a season. Now, Verlander hit 300, so he doesn't count. We're talking about over 300.
Yeah, we're talking about 301 plus.
Name those two pitchers, or I think we actually had a caveat. Just name one of the two and we'll give you some credit for that.
Did we get anyone guess before put in my answer?
Yes, sir. Yeah, we got Miranda Canber in Riverside says Nolan Ryan and Roger Clemens.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, that's a great guess.
Right, it is. There. Nolan Ryan is always going to be a safe guess when it comes to strikeouts.
When it comes to pitching records, 100%. However, she is incorrect on both fronts.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Roger Clemens didn't pitch for the Astros?
Oh, yeah. No, he did. He pitched for the Astros like 4 years, 5 years. In 2004, Clemens had over 200 strikeouts with the Astros. but well short of 300. And yeah, believe it or not, the most strikeouts Nolan Ryan ever had in an Astros uniform was 270, a paltry 270 in 1987.
31 strikeouts short.
Now he had 31. Oh, yeah. Now he did, of course, have multiple 300 or more strikeout seasons. Alas, none of them were with the Astros. Now, this is going to throw a wrench in most people's answers here because we got Jesse Feynman in Walnut Creek says Mike Scott and Larry Durker.
Wow.
Or Durker?
Yeah, we'll see. Mike Scott was my guess.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, that is correct. Mike Scott.
The ball scuffer, yes.
Is that how he did it? He's a bottle cap?
Yeah. Oh, he was sandpaper. He was, in the 1986 season, he was dinged for scuffing the balls before he threw them. Had some unusual movement, and that would be why, yes.
That's awesome. Well, he did it. So, cheating aside, he is in that club. Larry Durker, no. However, Larry Durker did get over 200 strikeouts in 1969. But yeah, just like Nolan, never eclipsed that 300 strikeout mark. So we did get one. Now we got Ron Terran in Frisco, Texas. Okay, he's got the inside knowledge. Says, not sure, guys, but I'm thinking Nolan Ryan and Don Wilson. Ooh, sorry, Ron. Yeah, no, definitely not Nolan Ryan. And Wilson, again, did have over 200 strikeouts in 1969 as well. So I think people were going sort of back then.
Right.
But sadly, yeah, fell short of 300. Now, we got half of the question.
Right.
So Mike Scott in 1986, yes, as you said, with 306. Who's the other guy? I'll give you a big hint. 1979. Yeah, you were alive. You remember, right?
Oh, yeah. I was all of two. I don't remember too much baseball from back then.
All right. Well,
I don't know the 1979 Astros well enough to wager a guess.
How do you sleep at night?
I don't. That's
that would be Mr. J.R. Richard with 313.
Yeah, see, I would have never come up with that name.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have researched, I imagine, but I did not. I had Mike Scott, but...
So there you go, Jesse. You know, I guess he did win. So you'll be hearing from us very soon. Remember, email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. What do you got for me this week?
Well, I have a very good West Coast bias question. So there's only been two pitchers in Major League history to have hit a grand slam and pitched a perfect game in their careers.
Whoa.
Who are those pitchers?
Whoa. Two?
Two.
Two have done it? Wow.
Two.
I mean, this narrows it down because there's only, what, two dozen, not even 23 perfect games in history? Is it 24
like that,
now?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Say that again one more time.
So two pitchers in Major League history have both hit a grand slam and pitched a perfect game in their careers.
Regular season or postseason?
Correct.
Okay. Two have done it.
Just any perfect game,
all right,
and any grand slam.
Well, one name comes to mind, okay, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, wow, okay, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Who are the only two pitchers with a complete perfect game and a grand slam? Well, it's definitely not Bumgarner.
No, it's not Bumgarner, although he has hit two grand slams.
Yeah, so he's halfway there.
He's halfway there.
Alas, I don't know if he's ever going to... I think his better days are behind him. But hey, Mike Fiers
got a no-hitter,
and he wasn't in his prime against the number one Dodgers team, so you never know.
Never know.
He did have a chip on his shoulder, though, so, you know. And why wouldn't he, right? Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what the answers are. We might have a bit more sporadic episodes throughout the season, but, you know, we started this show because there weren't... As hard as it seems to believe, really any regularly updated baseball podcasts in the off season. So fear not, we shall continue to do shows throughout the off season because that's kind of why we're here.
Right.
You know, anyway, that's it.
Keep the baseball discussion going.
There's
going
to be a lot of news this offseason.
This is going to be a fun offseason. There's a lot of movement that can take place here. And with all this cheating scandal thing, yeah, we're going to have some good episodes coming your way in this long, cold winter until pitchers and catchers report sometime mid-February.
It's going to come soon. I can already smell it. Oh, it's going to be really exciting, though, this offseason.
Oh, yeah.
I'm over here ear-to-ear grin. It better not be disappointing. Anyway, all right, on that note, from San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.